Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Stunt Trek. You're truly Uncle Jim. And we have an interesting show for you tonight. We have, of course, with us the one and only Leslie Hoffman. How you doing, Leslie?
Oh, well, you know, in the Adirondacks, they talk about cabin fever during the winter. But with this quarantine, I don't know if they should give it a new name or...
Corona fever.
Cabin fever. I mean, I'm the only time that I'm allowed out of the building is to walk the dog. And even that was, I'll call it a negotiation of which door I could go out and come in without going through signing in, signing out, having my temperature taken and all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
I mean, that's how, well, you got to realize the average age of most of the residents where I live is over 85. So they're being extra careful not to allow, you know, outside contact in.
Wow. Hopefully this all goes away really, really soon. We can only hope. I'm tired of the daily coronavirus updates and everything else that's involved with it, but unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be going away. Even when it goes away, it's going to be back. So that's unfortunate.
Well, that's exactly what I'm thinking, too, is that, I mean, you can have everyone stay in the house and then think that there are less people in the hospital, blah, blah, blah. And you say, okay, it's okay to come out of the house. But if you have someone who is contagious coming out of the house, you're just going to start the whole thing all over again.
Yeah,
I was just
exactly.
I was just talking about that on Facebook, and what they need to do, well, first of all, they need to solve the testing problem. That needs to be first and foremost, and they still haven't really solved it yet. But there is secondary serology testing that you can do. Because what the coronavirus test is doing is looking at RNA or DNA fragments to identify the organism. It's not looking at serology. What you have to do is you have to look at serology to find out if the person who's positive because they just got infected or is positive because they've had the virus for 2 weeks. Now,
right.
Ideally, you want to get to some point in the future where everybody who tests, where you get the serology tests going on as well as the other tests, and everybody who tests positive gives you an indication that they've been sick for a while, which means then it's pretty much going away at that point. But yeah, but until you need to test that to find that out for certain.
Well, we also have with us Admiral Ken. He's down in Albany, New York. And Ken, you wait. Oh, what's going on down in Albany?
Well, it's a lot quieter here. Tomorrow I go out for my twice a week forage at the grocery market. So we'll see what I can find there. There were still shortages on the shelves on Friday. I mean, as I remarked to one of the guys who was delivering bread, I don't know where these people are putting this stuff. Because the meat case is rifled through. The frozen foods are gone. It's like, I don't know where these people are putting this stuff.
Karen and I stopped at Price Chopper to pick up some hamburgers.
Does everybody in the universe suddenly have a freezer?
We're relegated to hamburgers and hot dogs now because that's pretty much all we can get at the store. So Karen goes to get a pound of hamburger meat at Price Chopper, and it's $8.99 for a pound of hamburger meat. Can you believe that? Yeah, we didn't get hamburgers. I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. And guys, we have a treat for you. We have with us from Trek Talking and Beyond, which is live every Thursday night, we have one of my oldest co-hosts from that show with us tonight, and I'm talking about none other than Charles. And Charles is out in Las Vegas. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing all right. The city here, who's also mostly closed too.
Wow. You know, guys, I gotta say, I guess I was a little bit upset when this whole closing came because I got the letter from the governor saying, oh, you're essential. You have to go to work. And I'm like, what? Everyone else gets to stay home and get paid, and I have to come to work and get paid? That kind of sucks. But you know what? I think I'm kind of lucky because I get to go out of the house. I get to wander around an empty building and hang out and go on Facebook and get paid. So I guess it's not that bad because I'm not trapped in the house. So I'm not that upset about it anymore.
Yeah.
So anyways.
Well, that's
not easy.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't thinking about this until last week is that I'll tell you, the ladies that are the aides for my mother, they still have a job. I mean, most of these people in Saranac Lake, you know, the restaurants, the whatever that have closed, the bars, the restaurants, whatever other public places, I mean, they're out of work. But, you know, the aides that come in to take care of my mother, they're still working. I mean, they're not registered nurses, but they are a medical necessary whatever element to the care of my mother. So they're actually very lucky that they are getting a paycheck.
Yeah, I don't know how many people would belong to a local union and would be getting paid while they're out of work versus how many people are just out of work with nothing. I don't know.
And that's a whole other story in California is I think the DGA, which is the Directors Guild, is putting money into an emergency fund or paying members of that union. The Screen Actors Guild isn't doing anything to help the membership.
Wow.
And pension and health plan, your premium for your health plan is due April 1st, and if you don't pay it, guess what? You don't have a health plan.
Wow. Charles, how are they handling things out in Las Vegas?
Some of the casinos are holding out and paying their employees, even though they've got their doors closed. Other people in the casinos or other businesses, they're out of work. Our unemployment rate skyrocketed quite a bit, just like the rest of the nation of so many people. I'm lucky I'm in education. I have to do some work from home during the week, but I'm still getting paid at least.
Wow. You know, I don't know how long they're going to be, they can sustain. I mean, I know the president wants everybody back by Easter Sunday. I don't see that happening. But realistically, I don't know how long they can keep the entire country shut down without having massive repercussions. You know?
That in the entire world. I mean, you read about Italy, you read about these other countries. I mean, yeah, the world cannot survive without a economy or economics or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's just, wow. Well, anyways, guys, we're here to take your mind off of all the coronavirus stuff. We're going to have some fun tonight. This is going to be a trial run for something that we're going to be doing on Trek Talking, not this Thursday, but next Thursday. A friend of mine, Mark Lee, had a gathering where we guessed some show tunes and TV tunes and stuff, and I got to be on with Michael Jan Friedman, who, by the way, is going to be a guest on our show next Thursday. And I talked with Leslie, and we said, well, let's talk about movie music in movies, TV shows, and movies. And I thought that's a really, really good idea, because if you've ever listened to Trek Talking and Beyond on Thursday night, you've heard me say many, many, many times that to me, music is a character in a movie or a TV show. It's just as important as what we're seeing visually is what we're hearing as well. So I'm really pay close attention to things like that. So music, obviously, is one of those things. And so Leslie and I decided we'd have a little bit of fun tonight. We talk about music and how it affects our enjoyment or lack thereof of movies and TV shows. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And if you guys would like to give us a call, our number here is 646-668-2433. And we'll be here for about another hour. So give us a call and tell us your favorite song and why you like it. So I have a whole bunch of sound bites here. I don't know if we're going to get to all of them, but I have them. And one of the things is music. What does it mean to a production? What makes music so connected to the visual experience? What makes music, when you hear a song, what makes it click in your brain? Well, as an example of that particular thing, I want to play a song here for you guys. And these are only clips. These are like 10 or 15 second clips, because I'm not going to play the whole song just to get the point across. So it's just going to be you'll understand when you hear it. So after I play this song, this clip, I want you guys to tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready? Are you ready? Because this is going to be, you're probably going to be mad at me for playing this one, because I know what you're going to be doing for the rest of the night, but here we go. Okay, you were all saying ah, weren't you? I know you were. So, so
Queen
that
had such a wonderful sound. I think the soundtrack, I hope I'm not about to insult anybody. The soundtrack was better than the movie. I mean, you hear the soundtrack from Flash Gordon, and you know that you're talking about the movie.
It's such an iconic. There are some songs that are just iconic, and that is one of them. That's one of those songs where you don't even need to see the movie, just hear the song. And you don't even have to hear the song, just the 12-second I played of it, and now that's going to be stuck in your heads for the rest of the night, which was my goal. But I think you're absolutely right, Leslie. I think that a lot of times the music for a movie can sometimes be better than the movie itself. And unfortunately, I don't have any Star Trek clips to play for you guys tonight. I decided to stay away from Star Trek because we all know that. So we have no Star Trek songs to play, just other stuff. But Charles, what do you think of when you hear that? Where does your brain go when you hear that? Where does that take you?
Freddie Mercury. And the power of Freddie Mercury. I've seen Queen in concert, but I never got to see Freddie leading the group. But that's just such a power band. And Freddie was just the great lead singer.
I never saw Queen either because Freddie passed so early. But we did go to the casino down in Schenectady and saw a group called Almost Queen. And they were Almost Queen. They were phenomenal. They dressed like the band. Oh. They even communicated to each other by their name, calling each other Freddie and stuff like that. They were awesome. And about three quarters of the way through the concert or so, they played every song you could want to hear. And all of a sudden, the lights started flashing from red to yellow, red, yellow, red, yellow, and you're dun 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 dun, and then flash, and the place went crazy. I went crazy. I pulled out my phone, videotaped it. The whole audience was yelling, flash, it was incredible. It was just awesome. So,
connecting the song to the movie, when I hear the song, clips of the movie that come to mind is when they were throwing that, I don't know what the object was, but they were throwing it like a football. So that clip comes to mind. And then also Brian Blessed, if that's how you pronounce his name. The winged guy, and Flash riding on that, I don't know what you would call it, that air ski thing.
Yeah.
I mean, those two clips come to my mind when I hear that song.
I think I've seen that movie more than Star Wars. It was playing in our local theater, and I went down and saw it twice every weekend for the whole summer. Loved it. I actually just bought the LP record of Flash because Jamie got me a record player. I had to buy Flash. So I put on the record and I sit in the back and I listen to Flash, the LP of Flash. So yeah, so music is very important. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I actually got to see Queen with Adam Lambert. And if you ever get the chance to see it, it is worth it. He's not Freddie Mercury, but he is a fabulous front man for Queen.
Did they do Flash when you saw them?
I don't remember. They probably did.
So music is so powerful that way back in the 70s when Star Wars came out, we didn't have VHS. We didn't have anything. We had no internet. If you wanted to see Star Wars, you went to the movies. I bought the double LP. And I would listen to the soundtrack and play. I would see the movie in my mind by listening to the song. Music can be that powerful. So I have another little clip I want to play for you guys that I think will take you right to the spirit. And I have to apologize to Leslie up front. This is a bad guy. I apologize, but you guys are going to be right there with me. You're going to hear leaves crackling under your feet and the wind blowing the leaves off the trees. And yeah, this is going to take you right there. Trick or treat. So That's the John Carpenter's Halloween. That song is so important to that movie that I saw an interview with John Carpenter when he was trying to shop that film around. And without the soundtrack, nobody was interested in that film at all. And they show it at film school without the soundtrack, and then they show it with soundtrack, and just the addition of that simple song sets the whole tone for the movie just from the song. You don't need to see the movie, just hear the song you know exactly what's going on. Michael Myers is right around the corner over there. And if you're a babysitter and the trick-or-treaters are on the way, you better run because you're not going to make it. And I was trying to find, Leslie, I apologize for Michael Myers. I was trying to find Nightmare on Elm Street. I was trying to find the Freddy Krueger song. 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. 3, 4, better lock your door. I was trying to find that one, but I couldn't locate it in time to do the show because I was going to play that one for you, but I couldn't
find it. If you went to the YouTube and said, like, final scene or finale scene, you know, as the car kind of kidnaps everybody and runs off, the girls are in the front yard and are singing that. You might find it there as opposed to the beginning of the movie.
So, Les, let me ask you a question. When you're sitting in a production meeting, like, say, I don't know, for Star Trek Voyager or whatever, and they're coming up with the scripts and they're going over all the action and the special effects and the makeup, and you're going to need a stunt person for this and a stunt person for that and everything else. Does the soundtrack, does music cues ever come into the conversation when they're sitting around the big table?
Unfortunately, no. Actually, I'll go back to original Star Trek as opposed to the other series. There was music that, you know, was... like what you play at the beginning of this show is that, you know, it's the big fight scene. You know, when they play that song, it's they're fighting. You know, they definitely had a song that indicated Spock. They definitely had, you know, like they kind of telegraphed that this is a funny scene. You know, they bits of music, but no, music does not sit at a production meeting, because the soundtrack already exists. So that's, I don't know what to call it, is that it's part of the end part of editing the show together and then overlaying the music to kind of give the audience the feeling, but it's not discussed in a production meeting.
So you don't know you don't know what the music, you don't know what it's going to. So when you were like on Nightmare on Elm Street, for instance, you don't know what the actual soundtrack is going to be until you sit down and see the movie for the first time then.
No. I mean, you know, especially television, you have the same beginning music. So it isn't like you have to, let's say you're doing a read-through for production as opposed to a read-through for the actors. It isn't as if the script has to say, you know, now is the music for Voyager, now is the music for Deep Space Nine. I mean, again, any music that is added comes in post-production and isn't talked about in, I guess you would call it, pre-production.
And who makes that decision, Leslie? Who decides what? Who makes the decision that we're going to use this theme song, or we're going to use that theme song? We're going to play Flash here. We're going to play Flash there. Who makes that decision? They wait till the movie's all done and then they start sticking in the Queen music, or do you know how they do that?
Well, I guess. Actually, I don't know the answer, but if I had to guess, it would be like the executive producers probably see the final product, what should be the final product cut together, and I assume that if they don't like a music or a scene or something like that, they'll tell the editor, you know, to change it, cut it out, switch the music. But it's way beyond the end of filming. So, unfortunately, I don't know the answer. I'm sorry.
Jim?
Wow, I stumped V. Leslie Hoffman.
Jack.
Go ahead, Ken.
Jim,
for some reason.
Morning on the
that comes this to morning mind on the... is there's an episode of Family Guy where Brian goes to Los Angeles and he accidentally ends up being a director of a porno film and he gets nominated. And before they do the nominations of the directors, they do the nomination of the music guys. And it's like they give some name, and there's this one guy, like, at just an electric keyboard, you know, boom, 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 boom. So, like, they name one or two guys like that. And then, then they go John Williams, and you see this full orchestra. And it's, I don't know, things like that I consider funny.
That is, because John Williams is a classic. So
right.
we have a lot of classic
a nominee for what they were calling Woody, which I'm not even sure if that's a true thing or not for porno film.
Wow. So we have a lot of classic I think songs that you hear them and they just take you right to where you need to be. You just hear it and you know. And here's a little ditty that my mama used to play for me when I was in my crib. Okay, we only need 5 seconds of that song. You guys know what that is, of course.
Yeah.
Twilight Zone.
The Twilight Zone. You know, a little funny story about the Twilight Zone, talking about when I was in the crib. The day that Karen gave birth to Jamie was on New Year's, and we were at the hospital, and the only thing that was on TV was the Twilight Zone marathon on the Sci-Fi Channel. So for 9 hours, Karen was in labor, giving birth to Jamie, and all that was on TV was the Twilight Zone. We watched, I don't know, 10 episodes of the Twilight Zone before Jamie decided to grace us with her appearance. Remember that, Ken? I think we lost Ken. Anyways, the Twilight Zone brings me to Jamie's birth. What do you think of when you hear that song, Charles?
Rod Sterling. Basically, just hearing that theme music and seeing him pop up in that suit. And it's like, okay, you know you're going to have a good story that's going to have a good and interesting twist in it.
Yes. They were, you know, those shows that came out in the 60s always had a catchy theme song. You know, a song that you would hear and know instantly, like this one right here. Well, Leslie, what do you think?
Well, it sort of sounded like the Munsters, except it kept on too long.
Well, I cut it out at 10 seconds. But, yeah, that's the Munsters. Not to be confused with the Addams Family now.
I actually got to work with them.
Really? Tell us all about it.
Oh, okay. Well, wait a minute. I'm catching up on the phone thing because it was after it was when they were starting to do, like, TV movies. I mean, the original Monsters was already done, but they either made two or three Monsters made for TV movies and... I'm trying to remember if the one I was in was called Munster's Revenge, and Fred Gwynne, who was Herman Munster, we actually became good friends on the set, and it turns out that as a teenager, he used to vacation in Lake Placid, 9 miles away from Saranac Lake.
Wow, what world.
It's interesting, as opposed to having a memory of episodes, it's a memory of having meeting this guy, or meeting, you know, Fred Gwynne.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Does he still
yeah.
no, he's not a, does he still come up there? Or did
unless
he pass away?
He flies up here from heaven. He's no longer with us.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if he's passed away yet or not. But
he passed away.
So
it was just still amazing to, you know, well, you sort of said is that you grow up with certain shows and to go out to Hollywood and suddenly be standing next to, you know, something. Well, as you say, is that these people that were part of your life when you were either a preteen or an early teen, and now you're standing right next to them, and some of them are actually talking to you. I mean, amazing. It's more of an amazing memory for me that I got to meet them as opposed to, yes, I remember the episodes, but it's very
yeah.
special.
It is, because I know meeting a lot of Star Trek actors at Star Trek conventions, you know, that's one thing. But when you're running your own Star Trek convention and you're working with these people behind the scenes, like you're their boss because you're paying them to be there, and you get a chance to sit down and talk with Mark Leonard and just hang and talk with the man personally, it's, you know, like you said, Leslie, it really is something special. I know exactly what it is you're saying. So this next song clip that I want to play for you guys. If you go to the beach in the middle of the summer and you play this song, I guarantee there won't be a person left in the water. Now, why is it that that song invokes utter terror in people if they're swimming and they hear that song? What is it about that song? What do you think, Charles?
The movie. I think that movie just scared. Now, here's a trivia for Jim, because I know Leslie knows her answer. What movie that Leslie appeared in used part of that song for their opening intro?
Oh, that's an easy one. That's the one.
Well, that's Jaws.
That's Jaws. But Leslie, what movie were you in that also used that introduction?
I never jest, and don't call me Shirley.
Uh oh.
Yeah.
You trivia stumped me. I don't know what movie had
yeah.
Jaws in the beginning of
Airplane.
Oh, 1941?
No,
Airplane?
Oh, okay.
Airplane, yep.
Because 1941, great, I just lost her name, is the role of swimming out in the ocean and the submarine comes up. And,
yes,
in Jaws, she gets eaten. In 1941, a submarine picks her up out of the water.
And then all of the Japanese soldiers are standing on the deck pointing up, yelling, Hollywood! Hollywood!
Hollywood!
Leslie, I love that movie. I think that movie, 1941, is an acquired taste. I think Steven Spielberg took a shot at comedy, and depending on how you look at it, he either blew it or he didn't. I like that movie. I think it's brilliant. I really love John Belushi in that movie, and I just think it's a great movie. But a lot of people don't like it. I think it's an acquired taste. And you
yeah.
were in that movie. You had stunt eggs in that movie.
It's. I think the problem was is that he had too many stories going at the same time. If 1941 had maybe only three stories going at the same time, maybe the audience would have accepted it a little more. But there was John Belushi in the plane. There was I can't think of names right offhand, but the guy trying to get the girl in the plane, because when she's in the plane, she's willing to have sex. Then my story was with Treat Williams, Wendy Jo Sperber, Nancy Allen, and the house on the West Shore, probably somewhere near Malibu. And then you had the military guy who's trying to watch Dumbo. I mean, you know, there was so much going on that I just feel the audience either wants like a plot and maybe a subplot, barely a C plot, but they definitely don't want E, F, G plots.
No, and that movie was loaded with star power too.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd, right. John Belushi. And Leslie Hoffman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's not forget that. I think you were in the motorcycle scene, right?
Right, the motorcycle sidecar that splits in half, and actually the driver of the motorcycle, not the driver of the motorized sidecar. I mean, that was a stunt trick. But the guy that drove the motorcycle doubling John Belushi is actually, his name is Bud Eakins, and he did the jump for Steve McQueen in The Great Escape.
So oh, that's
again,
cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like where I met Fred Gwynne to work with Bud Eakins and know that I'm working with this guy that did the jump in The Great Escape. It was like, wow, I can't believe that, you know, this man is driving the motorcycle. I mean, what an honor to be sort of related, or, you know, what is it, the six steps or whatever of Kevin Bacon, or, I mean, to be working with somebody that is so familiar, well, in the stunt community is so familiar that it was him that did the jump. I mean, you're just in awe. I mean,
did you give him a golden stunt egg?
No, I got the golden stunt egg. I went into the back of the egg truck. So I
you
covered
the,
an egg.
The stunt toilet paper egg. The stunt toilet paper
but
award.
But going back to, now that you reminded me about with Airplane, that it comes up through the clouds and
yeah.
It's sort of mocking the Jaws theme or whatever.
Yeah,
as the plane is going through the clouds, I think you're seeing the tail of the plane. So that's why they were playing Jaws.
Yeah, that's an iconic song. It's just one of those songs. So what do I want to play for you guys next and see what you guys think about it? Let me find something good here from my list. I got 171 songs here that I downloaded. And how about this one? How about this one? We'll see if you guys can catch. I know Leslie will catch this one.
Thank you.
So, Leslie, what do you think of when you hear...
Wild West with Robert Conrad.
And what comes to mind when you hear that?
Actually, what comes to mind is that they had two different beginning sequences. One where he basically right crossed the woman who's about to stab him. But I thought that was the first season, and then they changed it to where the woman has the knife and he kisses her, which makes her kind of faint. But now I'm not sure which one came first.
Yeah, when I hear that song, that animated, I think it was maybe four scenes that were animated at the beginning. He walks in and he sees
right.
a spur, and it goes through that little animated sequence, including the girl in the beginning. That just comes right to my mind when I hear that song. That's what I think of, is that animated cartoon opening with the woman with the knife and all that stuff. Just pops right in there.
Yeah.
What about you, Charles? Does that make you think of that opening sequence?
I don't remember that show. It's probably a little more before my time of what I watched.
That's all right. That's all cool. Because this one is for you, Charles. And that one only gets 5 seconds because I know you know it.
Sunday night, if I wanted to stay up late to watch Fox TV.
Yes.
If I wanted to stay up late. Because that was about, I think it was a 10 o'clock start when X-Files ran. So I didn't watch it every Sunday. But if I felt like staying up, yep, watching X-Files. A slightly more modernized version. A show that had a little bit of a twist like Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I think that would be like a Twilight Zone of the 90s. Would you agree, Leslie?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't watch X-Files, but the one thing that I do, in a way, a thin connection with X-Files is Tom Morga stunt doubled the cigarette man in the wheelchair going down steps.
Oh, wow.
I never saw the episode, but I know the stunt that he did.
Now, that was the same stunt. That stunt was done in... was it The Godfather? What was the or Psycho? What was the movie where the guy pushed the guy down the stairs in the wheelchair?
I'm
not sure.
Yeah, there was a movie where someone pushed someone down the stairs in a wheelchair, and then they did that same scene on the X-Files, but it was an homage to a scene from an earlier movie that was. You know, really popular. I don't know. Was it The Godfather? Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember. I guess the answer is if you're going to bring up a piece of trivia, you better know the answer to it. But I thought Leslie would know. I thought Leslie would know that one. Apparently
yeah.
not. But that's okay. We won't hold that against you. So let me see. All right, you know, here's one for you, Charles.
Oh.
That's all I'm going to give you.
Depending on what season it is. Oh, definitely. That one's cued towards the original version. Then they modified it in the 2000s. Oh,
yeah.
Definitely Doctor Who.
I don't know which version I pulled that off of. But, yeah.
That's probably about the 80s, 70s, 80s version.
It had the twirling thing behind it with the TARDIS twirling down the funnel or whatever you
yeah.
time portal thing, whatever you call that in Doctor Who. That one's for you. And
yeah.
they've redone that theme song. Every time they get a new Doctor, they change the song, right?
Yes, they tweak it.
And
but
that
still
one,
different seasons, they'll tweak it.
Well,
yeah.
That didn't sound like the one that I'm familiar with Tom Baker, but again, my connection to Tom Baker was he was a bad guy on Remington Steel, and he shot me off to the end of a pier.
Oh! That's really cool.
I mean, here's the guy that I absolutely love, and he's shooting at me.
Did he kill you? Did he actually kill you?
No. He was shooting at Mildred, and she was on this ladder that was going down off the pier, and you see her fall backwards. So I guess then it probably cut to commercial. So for 60 seconds or whatever, you don't know if he shot Mildred or not. But of course he didn't shoot her. She comes back and she just fell off the ladder. She wasn't shot.
So you got Doctor Who shot you. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was if you watch the beginning, it was called. I always get it reversed. It was either called Steel Hounded or Hounded Steel. And Mildred is trying to rescue this dog that Doctor Who has kidnapped. And she goes in through this window at a motel. But as she's rescuing the dog, Tom Baker comes into the room and she has to throw the dog out the window. And then she goes out the window. And, it was... It was fun. So it was interesting because here's this British show, and yet this guy, this just made me think of something else, is that, I mean, here this British actor that you know, I watch on Doctor Who is suddenly on Remington Steel. And, Tim Curry is from England. See, this is the way my mind jumps around. Tim Curry is from England. But he's most famous for Rocky Horror Picture Show. But I worked with him on Clue.
Wow. I did not know that Tom Baker shot you. I think that's really cool. Did you know that? Charles, did you know that Leslie got shot by Tom Baker?
No, I didn't. I love it.
Wow. See, this show is not only fun, but it's educational. We've learned about stunt eggs. We do everything on this show. So let me see if I can dig one out of my list here for Leslie. Let me see what I've got here. Let me dig deep here.
Yeah, you got to dig. Oh.
Okay. Here's one. This one goes out to Leslie. Well, Leslie. Lost in space. Yes, that's the original. that's
yeah.
Not the remake. It's not the new TV show that's on Netflix. It's not the 1998 movie. That's the original TV show with Billy Mummy, I think, was on it. Was it? Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it was Bill Mummy that played Will Robinson, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So... Leslie, do you have any stories about Lost in Space? Did you get shot by the robot or anything exciting?
No, and now, boy, if I knew what songs or shows you were doing, I would have looked up the names. Is that when I used to do sci-fi conventions, the little person that used to be inside the robot, he used to go to the conventions and he'd sell all different sizes of the robot, except I can't think of what his name is. He's passed away too, unfortunately, but I want to say something Mays, Bill Mays. I don't know. You'd have to look that up. But he was such a nice guy. But that's my only connection to Lost in Space, other than as a, again, preteen, young teen, I used to watch that show all the time.
Yeah, I think everybody watched. Now I'm gonna tell you a funny story. I don't know if I said this before or not, but the woman that played Penny on Lost in Space, friend of mine, Mark Lee, was running this huge Star Trek convention in Atlantic City, New Jersey, called MegaCon, and he asked me to come down and help him do security. So me and my wife, she was just my girlfriend at the time, Karen, went down there to help him. And we're sitting in the green room. The Sci-Fi Channel was there doing this whole documentary thing. And they had the entire cast of TNG there and Lost in Space, including the robot. And we're sitting in the green room taking a break. And this really nice lady, an older lady. Now, okay, I was only in my 20s. Okay, so when I say older, I'm talking in her 40s. Okay, she may have been maybe pushing 50, but okay, I wouldn't say she's old now, but when I'm 20, she was old. And a really nice lady. She comes over and sits down with me and Karen at the table, starts talking to us. The Sci-Fi Channel setting up their cameras and asks us what we think about the show. And I said, you know, they're paying all this attention to Lost in Space, which was the dumbest show ever on television. It was just completely stupid. And they should be talking to Patrick Stewart and LeVar Burton about Star Trek The Next Generation and not all this Lost in Space stuff. And with that, the lady setting up the Sci-Fi Channel interview says, what was her name? Penny Marshall? No, that's Laverne and Shirley. Help me out, Charles. What's the name of the woman from Lost in Space that played Penny?
I don't remember.
Well, Penny on Lost in Space was Angela Cartwright.
That's it. The lady, the Sci-Fi Channel calls Angela Cartwright. They said, Miss Cartwright, we're ready. She gets up and goes over and sits down, and they start talking about Lost in Space, and I realized that I just told Penny that her show sucked. And we quickly snuck out the back door and with my foot deep, deep in my mouth.
Here's a piece of trivia, is that Angela Cartwright is one of the children in Sound of Music.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And Christopher Plummer is also in that movie, and he was General Chang in Star Trek VI. So,
yeah, right,
tied into Star Trek. But, and you know what? She was so gracious.
So if you look at the children, if you just grab a clip of Sound of Music where maybe like where the children are introducing themselves, you know, the captain is making the children introduce themselves, you'll see Angela Cartwright in Sound of Music.
Well, you know what? She was very gracious and very friendly and very nice, and she let me talk about how sucky her show was, never told me, never took offense to it. She was very gracious through the whole thing. I wish I could meet her again and say, look, I was a young fool. I didn't mean to say that about your show, but I did, so. Oh, well. Well, we're down to 5 minutes. I don't know if I have enough time for one more clip or not. Let me see. Do I have one here? Yeah, how about this one? I think this is a short one. Leslie, what's that?
It was echoing too much. I couldn't figure that one out.
Let's play it one more time. Catch it yet?
I can't hear it well enough to. No, I can't figure out which song that one is.
That was Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Oh, that's
classic.
Really, well, that's an Irwin Allen. You got to realize all that, you know, there were different producers in various time periods that, I mean, they had show after show. So Irwin Allen was Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. I believe he was Lost in Space. He was Towering Inferno. He
time
was Poseidon
Tunnel.
Adventure.
Land of the Giants.
I mean, like I say, they were. Or do you remember Stephen Canal with the typewriter and pulling out the piece of paper and throwing it up in the air and made it see?
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's not even music. That's even just a clip of film that you know what you're looking at. Or MTM, the Mary Tyler Moore production, which was Remington Steele, and I forget what other shows she did, but it would say MTM, and then there would be a picture of a little kitten above the T. And like for Remington Steele, they had like a Sherlock Holmes hat on the cat and a pipe. And when it meowed, the pipe fell out.
Oh. Wow. Well, Leslie,
I don't know if they really do things like that anymore.
Can you believe it? We've gone through a full hour already.
Wow.
Incredible, isn't
fun.
It? I didn't even get to play the Planet of the Apes.
We went through the hour, but it was really fun. Real quick, it was, you know, in the 50s and the 60s, you had the Western songs, you know, like Johnny Rode Into the Town. He played a... I mean, nowadays you watch these movies and you just kind of go, oh, my God.
What about the classic Burning of the Mac from Bonanza?
Oh, yeah. Right, well, Bonanza, Rawhide, Gunsmoke, you name it. Even it came after, really, was High Chaparral. You hear these songs and you know what show you're about to watch.
Yeah, I think that's something that TV has lost today. I don't think that the theme songs for a lot of these shows today are as important or integral a part of the show as they used to be back in the 60s.
No. I think there's some of them are still very. One of them comes right off the mind that was played on a Friday night was Big Bang Theory.
Yep.
You know, that's an iconic song. You hear the beginning of that, you know exactly what the show is.
Right.
Well, you know what I think, Charles? I think it might be the fact that back in the 50s and 60s, they only had what? Two TV stations or three TV stations?
Three.
So
there wasn't
a lot to choose from. So, you know, you had Gilligan's Island and you had certain shows, and that was it. And then as TV grew up and progressed, now we have 24-hour TV. We have 9,000 channels with up to millions of TV shows. So it's really hard to find that one song or that one show that identifies with so many people because there's just so much out there. Like The X-Files, that's a classic. You know, there are songs that... Star Trek, you know, there are songs that hit that plateau, but not as many as there used to be. I think that's just a product of our time.
Yeah.
But anyways, the nice lady is telling me that we got 10 seconds to go. So, can you believe that? So we're going to go over a little bit, but that's okay. I want to say thank you to Ken for checking in with us and hanging out with us for a little while. Ken had to go. We had some medical issues. So thank you for hanging out with us, Ken. And I want to say thank you to Charles, my most excellent co-host from Trek Talk. And thanks for hanging out with us tonight, Charles.
Oh, thank you. Since there's not much, since I'm doing social distancing, there's not much one can do. So one can do social distancing and go online.
That's true. And we're socially hundreds and hundreds of miles apart, but we're like right here on the radio together though. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And of course we couldn't do the show without the one and only Leslie Hoffman. So thank you for hanging out with us, Leslie, and sharing some of your memories about getting shot by Doctor Who. That's pretty cool.
Oh, it was a walk down memory lane. It was wonderful.
And I hope you guys listening around the globe, I hope you like some of the songs I picked out for you guys. I have a lot more, but I just couldn't get to them. Maybe we'll just have some fun and we'll do a, maybe I'll get together with Charles and Eric and we'll do something special for you guys with some songs or something, kind of like my buddy Mark B. Lee did. We'll do something like that with you guys. But we're going to be talking about the season finale of Star Trek Picard on Thursday night. You guys don't want to miss that. And the following Thursday, we're going to have Michael J. Friedman on. He's an author of just dozens and dozens and dozens of books, a lot of Star Trek books as well. And we're going to have him on. He is a Yankee fan, so we got to take that into account. And we're going to have some fun with some music as well. If you guys watched Mark B. Lee's show, you know that I was on with Michael Jan. And one of his favorite shows was I Dream of Jeannie. That was his answer for everything. We're not going to play I Dream of Jeannie, but I do have some surprises up my sleeve for Michael Jan. And we're going to have Charles and Eric take on Michael to see who knows the most movie/TV theme songs. So we're going to have some fun with that. So you guys want to check that out. That'll be next Thursday on Trek Talking and Beyond. And if you want to give a call and talk to Michael, you have a question for him, number's the same as it is for Trek Talk or for Stunt Trek, 646-668-2433. And please head on over to the Facebook page, Trek Talking and Beyond, say hello, and check out the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page. Say hi to Leslie, drop her a line, tell her what you thought about the show, whatever. Leslie loves to hear from you guys. She's practicing social distancing as well. And as you heard, she's locked in her house as well. So what a better time than now to just say hello and talk to Leslie. She'd love to hear from you. And I'm Uncle Jim, and I want to say thank you for spending this hour plus with us tonight, reliving some memories, listening to some old TV and movie theme songs. And if you had a good time, tune in to Trek Talking and Beyond Thursday night, and we'll continue the conversation. Thanks a lot, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Be good to each other. We'll see you all next Sunday with another episode of Stunt Trek and Beyond with yours truly and D. Leslie Hoffman. I don't know what the topic will be, but it's always good. Maybe stunt eggs. Who knows? Oh, and I want to say thank you to David Schroeder, who's listening to us right now live on the radio. Thanks, David. A little shout out to David. And you guys be good to each other. We'll see you next week on another episode of Stunt Trek Sunday night at 7 p.m. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Live long and prosper.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.